Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence.
Thank you, Mr. Ernie. I appreciate that. No more appropriate song than what we're our passage will be about today. So if you've got your Bibles, let's go ahead and open up to to Revelation chapter 12. I'm going to switch gears here. That one's a little floppy on me. And we're going to look at the entire chapter this morning of Revelation chapter 12. So today starts, if you'll remember back in chapter 10, I believe it was, in the interlude section, John was told that he would have to prophesy again, that he would have to tell again. Yeah, it's in chapter 10, verse 11. Let's just read it. "You must again prophesy about many peoples and nations and languages and kings." And so John was commissioned to prophesy again. And so that is what we are going to be looking at this morning, is that again section that John must prophesy about. And really what happens here in this final cycle of judgment known as the dragon cycle, and you'll see why in just a minute, but what we really have here is kind of a 20,000 foot view of kind of the end. And I say the end very loosely, because in some sense, since Christ returned back to heaven, we've been in the end of times, right? And so really it's a cosmic view. It's a view from heaven of the events, whereas what we've been looking at has been like an earthly view of what's going on. And so today it's like we're going to take a step up and look at it from up here, whereas we've been looking at it from down here. And you'll see how that works out in just a minute. Now, with that being said, over the next few weeks, we're going to meet some new characters that we haven't met before. All right? And so might I remind you, I've actually got a really funny story I'm going to tell you in just a minute, that, again, Revelation is written to real people in real places with real problems, right? And they lived a long time ago, but God in His sovereignty has allowed this message to be kept for us today because there is application and meaning for you and me, right? But since Revelation was written a long time ago, it was written in a type of language. Remember, it's called apocalyptic literature. It's vastly different than what we have today. And so even though we've got some new characters, the same style of metaphor and symbolism carries over today, okay? So we're going to kind of walk through this in small chunks at a time. So we're going to read just verse 1 and 2 to begin, all right? "And a great sign appeared in heaven." That's our first key, that something's about to happen, all right? "And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. Verse 2, "She was pregnant and was crying out in birth pains and the agony of giving birth." All right, let's go back to verse number 1. So the first thing that John sees is a great sign in heaven of a woman, and this woman is elaborately and clothed in heavenly array, so to speak. She's got she's clothed with the sun, that's brilliant and bright. The moon is under her feet, and she's got a crown with 12 stars on it. So it's a very elaborate display of, and I'm going to have to grab my phone here just for a second to illustrate a funny story here in just a minute. But it also tells us one thing about this woman, and what is it? She's pregnant and about to give birth. Now, several years ago, Mark and I, we went to St. Louis to this event that our friend Scott Kesterson put on called Bards Fest, and he asked me to preach a couple times, and there was a diverse group of people from all over the United States there. And so after my second, I believe it was the second time I preached, some of us, I don't even remember who in the group, I can't remember who was there, I just remember I was there, right? And there was this guy came up, and I didn't know the guy, but he was like on the production part of things, like he was running cameras or on the production side, and I knew when the word came out of my mouth, uh-oh, I opened a can of worms, and I'm not going to be able to get back in this. I just mentioned the word, the revelation. That's all I said. Or maybe I mentioned a passage in Revelation something. You know, John says in Revelation, and that guy did this right here. Hey, hold on a second, hold on. He got out his phone, and he's, you know, you can tell he's figuring out something. And I'm not kidding, y'all. This is what happened next. Hold on a minute. And he does like this, and he's like, oh, there it is. See, look right here, look right here, look right here. He's like, man, we're in the end times. And what he had, it was a really cool app. It was a star app. It was a map, an app that would pull up the stars in the sky. And it was, I think the word is gyroscopic. So as you moved, it would show you by day, by hour, wherever you were located. If you move that sucker around, it would show you what constellations were in the sky on a specific day. If you went down like that, it was showing you what was like under the earth, on like this, you know, if you're in Antarctica looking up, like what's down there? You did like that, it's like the North Pole looking up. So it didn't matter, that whole sucker. And so he's like, hold on, let me find the day. And so he comes up. And so obviously, I didn't know this, obviously there's a constellation that's a woman. And so on his little screen goes, and there's this picture of a woman that shows up. And then the sun is like over her head. And the moon is like under her feet in this little constellation app because of the like arc of where the sun was traveling and the moon was traveling. And he's like, hey man, we're in the end. Christ is coming soon. And I was like, man, that's a cool app you got there. Right? It's the most I can muster up. And what was that guy thinking? That like literally this was the sign of the end. And in my mind, I'm like, I didn't have the heart to tell him, buddy, I just don't know if that's quite right. Because, you know, you've only got a limited amount of time. And anyway, and so all I could muster was, hey, bud, that's a cool app you got. It's a cool app you got there. Man, that's pretty interesting. What was that guy doing? He was reading a very literal interpretation of Revelation, which you can do. I don't think it's right. So we got to ask the question of, if it's not literal, then what is John meaning, and what are we supposed to gain from this? We're going to have to hold on to that question, and we'll answer it in just a minute. All right, so let's go to the next verses, verse 3 and 4. Verse 3, John says, and another sign, so he's now, this is the second one. Another sign appeared in heaven, behold, a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his head 7 diamonds. That's crowns, 7 crowns. All right, verse 4. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth so that when she bore her child, he might devour it. Ooh. All right, so what do we have in verse 1 and 2? This kind of heavenly arrayed woman. And what do we have in verses 3 and 4? The exact opposite picture, the polar opposite. We have a red dragon symbolizing murderous intent. And we have this powerful dragon who's swept down stars from heaven. And he's, what is he about to do? The woman is about to give birth, bring life into the world. And what is the dragon ready to do? Take life from the world. Right? And so what you've got is you've got these polar opposite pictures that are set up to have some type of conflict between each other. All right, well, let's read verse 5 and 6. All right. She gave birth. All right, the heavenly arrayed woman gives birth to a male child. And look how he's described. One who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. In other words, he is to be a kingly ruler. But what was the dragon going to try to do? Kill the child, right? But look what happens. Does he succeed? No. But her child, the male child, was called up to heaven to God and to his throne. All right, verse 6. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God in which she is to be nourished for. Look at the date. Look at the numbers. 1260 days, right? That look familiar? It should, because that's the same numbers we read in previous chapters. That's the same as 42 months or 3.5 years, which we read about in the witnesses interlude, right? And otherwise showing again that this is meant to be interpreted symbolically or metaphorically, all right? Now, at this point, what's going on? So let's recap. So John sees a heavenly arrayed woman and an ominous red dragon ready for destruction and killing. And then they have conflict between one another, right? And the dragon thinks that as soon as the woman gives birth to her child, that he is going to be able to destroy the child. But instead, what happens? God intervenes and God saves the child and God rescues the child from the dragon. Okay? We good so far? All right. Now, let's jump down to verses 7 through 9. Because what verses 7 through 9 have, what we've read so far, is kind of the action in the present. But it's kind of like, you know how sometimes in those movies, they give you the present part of the movie, and then a couple years later, they release the prequel? You know how they've done that? I hear they've done that in Star Wars. I don't know. I've never watched Star Wars before. But you know, in some movies, they give you like the prequel. Well, verses 7 through 9 are the prequel to what we just read. All right, so let's read those. Here we go. Now war arose in heaven. I want you to notice who is fighting in the war. Michael and his angels fighting against who? The dragon. And the dragon and his angels fought back. Now we're going to learn who the dragon is. Verse 8. But he was defeated, and there was no longer any place for them in heaven. Verse 9. And the great dragon was thrown down. Look how he's described. That ancient serpent, remember Genesis 3? The serpent? Who is called the devil and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. He was thrown down to earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. All right, now we can put the pieces of the story together to this point. So what have we learned, or what can we gather from what we've read up to this point? Here's what we can gather. First, there was war in heaven between the dragon, how's he described as? Who is he? Satan, the devil, however, the deceiver of people, however you want to describe it. The dragon is waging a war in heaven, and the dragon has people on his side. It says the dragon and his angels. You remember that third of the stars that were swept down? That's a reference to the angels that Satan gathered with him. We would call those what? Demons, right? So we have Satan and his horde are in heaven fighting Michael, an archangel, and the angels who didn't rebel against God. Now notice who Satan is not fighting. Who's he not fighting in heaven? Jesus and God. You want to know why? They're not equals. Some people in our culture today think Satan and Jesus are brothers. And this is just a family squabble. They're not. They are not equals. Michael and Satan are on the same level because they are both angels. And in fact, it's still not even a real fight. So Satan and his horde of demonic angels are fighting a war in heaven, and they absolutely lose. Ren, go back to verse 8. Look at the description of the battle. But he was defeated. It wasn't even close. It's not like up in heaven they were going, "Ooh, I don't know who's going to win." You know? No, he was defeated. And look what happened. As a result, there was no longer any place for them in heaven. In other words, they lost and all of them were kicked out. And so what happens? Well, verse, but I'm going to give you just a little preview. Verse 13 says they were thrown down to earth. So they can't, you can't stay here. So they were thrown down to earth. They were made to leave. They were put on earth. And what happens when Satan and his horde get to earth? What is verses 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 tell us? That they wage war against the heavenly adorned woman and try to kill her child. Now, who do those people represent? Right? Because we've got to kind of figure out this rest of the story. So the woman represents, some people like to say it represents Israel. I think a better interpretation of this is the faithful of God, like the faithful people of God. And so what is Satan doing? When he's thrown out of heaven and he's lost up there, who does he try to attack next? The faithful people of God. And who is the Baal child? Jesus. So you could look at this kind of in biblical sense. Satan couldn't win in heaven, and so he came to earth. And who did he start attacking? Genesis 3. People. And what did he do in the Old Testament? Time after time after time after time. Who is Satan trying to attack? God's people. It might be through the Amalekites. It might be through the Egyptians. What happens in Exodus? Come on, come on, come on, come on. What happens in Exodus? Moses goes to Pharaoh because a new Pharaoh arose in Egypt who did not know Joseph and enslaved the Israelites. And Moses, what is... Come on, y'all can go watch Ten Commandments this afternoon with Charlton Heston. What does they say? Let my people go. And what does Pharaoh say? No. And how many times does he say it? 9 times. Even as his country is devastated economically, physically, emotionally, devastated for plague after plague after plague after plague. And what does Pharaoh say? No, in fact, you're going to make more bricks. And this time, I'm not even going to provide you with a straw to make the mud bricks. You're going to now have to go gather the straw yourself and then still make the same number of bricks you've always had to make. Right? That's what? Persecution? And then what happens? God delivers his people through the Exodus. And then in the wilderness, he helps them. And on their way to the promised land, they're attacked. And what happens? Right? God delivers them. And so as Satan is thrown down from heaven, from an Old Testament sense, what does he do? He attacks God's people over and over and over. And then eventually brought forth from God's faithful people is God's very own son, Jesus, born of Mary through the Holy Spirit. And what does Satan do when Jesus is a baby? I think we're going to have to read it at Christmas. Y'all looking a little. Right? Here's what happens. Herod, a despot, tyrannical king, says, hey, I've heard there's a king coming, and I'm the only king in town. And so what does he do? He has all the babies around Bethlehem and in the surrounding area murdered. And what happens 30-ish years later when Jesus is about to start his ministry and Jesus has been in the wilderness for 40 days? What happens? Satan comes to him and says, hey, bud, I know you're hungry. You know, you got the power to make this rock into bread. And then he takes him up to the pinnacle of the temple and says, hey, you know what? You know those words, they say that if you fall off, your angels will protect you. And then when that doesn't work, what's the last thing he says? He takes him up to a high place and shows him all the kingdoms of the world and said, if you, Jesus, just bow down before me, I'll give you everything you see. At every moment from the Genesis 3 to the New Testament, Satan, when he couldn't win in heaven, tried to attack God's people, even trying to get Jesus not to go to the cross. At every turn. And at every turn, God's people were provided for, rescued, and delivered. At every turn. Single turn, even Jesus being raised from the dead. Now, we're going to skip verses 10 and 11, and we're going to come back, or 10, 11, 12, we're going to come back to them. So let's go down to verse number 13, because the story picks back up in the present time. And when the dragon saw that he had been thrown down to the earth, he pursued the woman who had given birth to the male child. And then verses, just hang with me through verses 14, 15, and 16, okay? But let's read them. But the woman was given two wings of the great eagle so that she might fly from the serpent into the wilderness to the place where she is to be nourished for a time and a times and half a time. Verse 15. Just hang on. The serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman to sweep her away with a flood. Verse 16. But the earth came to the help of the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed the river that the dragon had poured out of his mouth. All right, so look. Here's, I know you're like, whoa, man. Whoa, can we find this in history? Like, when did, you're missing the point. The point is what we just talked about, that time and time and time again, Satan has tried to throw off, persecute, and destroy God's faithful people, and time after time after time, God has rescued them. That's the point of verses 14 through 16, is that Satan tries to conquer God's people, and God rescues his people. Satan tries to conquer God's people, God rescues his people. Now, verse 17, listen to me. Verse 17. Then the dragon became furious. That word furious, that is the verb form of the noun of our noun, wrath. So this isn't just like he's upset a little bit. He is boiling. He is like, you know, the old like Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner when the steam comes out of his ears. Like, that's the picture right here. Okay? Furious with the woman, the faithful of God. Now listen to this next part. And went off to make war on the rest of her children, or the rest of her offspring, on those who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus. And it ends with, and he stood on the sand of the sea, which is a springboard to what we're going to look at next week. But let's read verse 17 again. Then the dragon became wrathful with the woman, with the faithful of God, and went off to make war on the rest of her offspring, on those who keep the commandments of God and hold the testimony of Jesus. Now, we got to ask two questions about this. Number one, who are the rest of her children? And two, what does it mean to make war? Okay, now hold on. Let's follow the trajectory we've already seen. Kind of, when Satan didn't win in heaven, he was thrown down to earth. And who did he start persecuting? The faithful of God. God's faithful people. And then who did he try to persecute and get to not go to the cross? Jesus. All right, so kind of that's like, if you want to look at it in terms, you could say that's kind of like an Old Testament and then the Gospels. But the Bible doesn't end with the Gospels, does it? The New Testament, the Gospels. What is the book right after John? You can feel free to look. You can pull up on your phone. What is it? Acts. And what happens in Acts? Chapter 2. The church. And what is the rest of the New Testament? It is letters about how the church is supposed to function and believe. Who do you think the rest of the faithful of God's children are? Well, most closely, it's the readers of Revelation. Those seven churches that John's writing to in chapter 2 and 3, it's them. Like, John is saying, you're the rest of her children. Why? Because they keep God's commandments and hold to the eyewitness testimony of Jesus. Right? They hold on to that. We've seen that. You've got to jog your memory and go all the way. It was a long time ago. We talked about chapter 2 and 3. We saw that many of the churches that John wrote to were actively facing persecution. In fact, one church, one guy was named by name, Antipas, as a person who had died for the faith. And so John is trying to show them from a cosmic view that God, that Satan couldn't win in heaven, and so he persecuted these people. And then he tried to persecute Jesus, and now he is making war against you as well. And by proxy and by extension, that includes you and me here today. Now, what does it mean to make war? It means what you think it means. The word literally means to fight a battle. So the idea that is that we too are included in this grand narrative of history that Satan is trying to thwart God's plan in the world. And this is not anywhere on your sheet, on your handout. But one of the outflows, and probably should have been, I should have put it in the application part. If you want to write it in there, that's fine. Is if you think, and I think, I want to follow God, but I don't want to have to deal with all the bad stuff. Chapter 12, totally throw, you can't do both. Those are mutually exclusive ideas. If you follow Jesus, you are being placed on the battlefield, and the enemy will try to attack you. That's why in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 and following, Paul uses a Roman soldier's battle kit to show you what you and I must put on to face off the enemy, because Paul knew that the enemy was going to try to attack us. And that if we weren't properly outfitted, we would not be able to stand in the day of battle. So for us to walk in here today, even though we live in the wonderful country in 2024 with all of the stuff, and to think, hey, I'm going to serve the Lord, and man, hey, that battle stuff, Satan ain't, you know, I'm going to be immune to all that. That's a lie, friends. That is not the truth. It will not happen. If you and I choose to serve the Lord, you are also choosing to fight in the battle. You do not have a choice about that. But listen, you do have a choice as to how you fight. Right? So, again, this is free. This is not in your notes. Right? But listen to me, listen to me. I think I did this one Sunday years ago. And I know I did it with some teenagers previously. But the way the Roman soldiers fought is they fought shield to shield. Right? And so, the reason they were, well, there's a lot of reasons they were successful. But in one sense, one of the reasons they were successful is because everybody did exactly what they were supposed to do. Right? And so here's the idea. Imagine that you and I are shield to shield. Paul talks about taking the shield of faith, right? All Paul says we have to do, we're going to talk about this later in a minute, but all Paul says we have to do is stand in Ephesians 6. He doesn't say run. He doesn't say fight actively. He just says stand. And so the reality is, if you can imagine us in here today as locked shield to shield, all you have to do is stand right there beside your brother and sister in Christ. And the only way you lose and the only way I lose is if one of us gets overzealous and tries to run across the battlefield, or if one of us gets lazy and decides to sit down. Right? And if we're honest, we're all prone to the latter one more than the former one. We just get a little lazy. Like, oh, we got this. I'm good. I'll just take some time off. Well, what have you just done? You've not only endangered yourself, but you've endangered all those people around you. Right? That's why, listen to me, on a practical level, that's why our win statement, our like goal, our how we win at doing church is moving ourselves and others toward Christ. Because if you're not moving toward Christ, you're not only hindering yourself, you're hindering everybody else. And that's why our win is for all of us to be moving toward Christ and to be standing firm together, because I want you to win just as much as I want myself to win. Right? Because it is a team game. It is a team sport. All right? So, here we go. And we got a few more verses to read, but let's recap where we've been so far. So, Satan couldn't win in heaven. So, where's he? And he gets thrown down to earth. And what happens? He attacks the faithful of God. Then he attacks God's son, Jesus, the male child. And then, when he can't do that anymore, who does he attack? The rest of her children. You and me, the first readers of this book, and every follower of Jesus from that time to this time. So here's the question. Here's the question. Satan is going to attack. In the past, God has delivered and rescued, and Satan has been defeated. So the question then is, how do you and I defeat and win the battle and be victorious today? We've already talked about it a little bit, but verses 10 through 12 give us the exact answer. All right, so let's read those. All right. And I heard a loud voice in heaven. Right, so this is kind of in the middle of this passage. So John is hearing something from heaven again. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brothers has been thrown down, who accuses them day and night before God. So in other words, I think I titled this in your notes, the pronouncement. In other words, there is really no question about who's going to win in the end. As Ernie's saying, I mean, perfect for today, right? I mean, we win. God wins. There's not even any question about it. There's never been a time when it's been kind of up in the air. And so God wins. Now, verse 11 is the strategy for how you and I are a part of his winning. All right, look what it says. And they, that's the faithful of God, the rest of her children, and they conquered him. They, that's you and I, conquer him. Who's him? This dragon, Satan, conquered him. How? By the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. For they love not their lives, even unto death. So the strategy, how do you and I stand strong? And how do you and I win in the end, and are a part of God's victory? It is only in our connection with Jesus and in the word of our testimony. All right, verse 12. This is kind of the outcome. Therefore, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. But woe to you on earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you in great wrath, because he knows his time is short. In other words, I'm going to put it to you, as one of my seminary professors put it to us. Satan today is no more than a dog on the leash. And the only way you get bit by a dog on a leash is if you get too close to the dog who's on the leash. Right? I mean, come on now. Listen, when I was in college, my two friends, they love to run long distance. I have never been a long distance runner. I was always a great short distance runner. But somehow they tricked me into running with them. And at this particular season in college, we lived right at the edge of campus, and they decided for us to go run down near the, for lack of a better way to say it, the drug houses. We did not know that at the time. We later found out at the time, and there were stray dogs everywhere. In fact, one time, and this was the only time I ran with them, and because I was the last in the line, and you know what the old saying is, how do you not get eaten by the bear? Just don't be last, right? And so I was last, and this dog was so close to biting my calf, I could feel his breath on my calf if I was running. I mean, I could feel the heat off of his breath on my calf. But you know what we didn't have to worry about was the pit bull in the yard. You want to know why? Because he was on a chain. And it didn't matter as long as you didn't run in the circle of that chain. As long as you stayed outside of that chain, that pit bull looked like he was about to bite your head off. But he couldn't do nothing because he could only go so far. Right? And so the idea is the devil is a dog on a leash. And the only way you get bit is by getting too close. But the reality is, and you can look at it this way, Satan knows he's whipped. But he's going to take as many folk with him as he can. And so how do we make sure we're not in that circle and he don't whip us? By the blood of the Lamb and by the word of our testimony. So how does this apply to us today? I got four ideas, but we're only going to really talk about one because we've talked about the first three kind of off and on for the last week. So here, let's just read them though. Here we go. Jesus and Satan are not on the same level. We mentioned that. God's victory was from the foundation of the world. In other words, God was victorious before the first Adam was created and will always be victorious. Number three, we win because of our connection with Jesus. We've seen that. But here's the one I want to focus on today. That's the fourth one on there, your testimony. Ren, will you pull back up verse 11? It's fascinating to me that the chorus in heaven doesn't put a comma after the word lamb. So, like, what we have read so far would have read, and they have conquered him by the blood of the Lamb, comma, for they love their lives, love not their lives even unto death. But this time, what do they add? They add in that phrase, and by the word of their testimony. What does that tell me? You know what it tells me? And you need to hear today. Listen to me. Your eyewitness account of what God has done in your life is very powerful. Because how do they conquer? It's not, yes, primarily, it is by the connection we have with Jesus, by the blood of the Lamb. We've sang the song in here. You've got to be washed in the blood of the Lamb, right? You can find the hymn in your hymn book and read it. We got to be washed in the blood of the Lamb, right? Absolutely. But there is value and there is power, and it is part of the victorious strategy for you and I to be victorious over the enemy, for your testimony to be shared. There is power in what God has done in your life and you telling that to other people. Listen to me. Our culture, to its great demise, has devalued logic and reason in the last 4 years greatly, which is a great travesty, in my opinion. Right? But you know what they have put in its place that is, strangely enough, to their demise? Lived experience. Listen to me. You say, well, Pastor, how does that go with this? Let me show you. The world and your neighbors and your friends and your teenagers and kids, your classmates and the people you do life with on ball, they may want to argue over the historicalness of Jesus. And they may not want to believe you on the facts of creation and intelligent design. And they may want to disagree with you about, was Jesus really dead when he went in the tomb? Right? And they may want to argue with you over the facts. But you know what they can't argue with you over? What God has done in your life. And so truthfully, as much as it is to our demise as a culture to throw away logic and reason, it is to their demise to open up the big door to lived experience, because they cannot tell you that God did not do what he did in your life. What are they going to say? No, he didn't do that. How do you know he didn't do that? Were you there? No. Well, you can't tell me he didn't. Right? So, a great door in our culture has been opened for you and I to share what God has done in our life. And look, listen to me. I know what some of you are thinking right now. Oh, Pastor, that sounds hard. It is not hard. Let me show you. When you're in conversation with somebody, you can throw in what God... You don't have to give your whole 5-minute testimony of when you were a kid, you recognized your sin at VBS because of this, and then you went down the aisle. You don't have to get... Yeah, you need to be able to do that. You need to be able to share your faith story in 3 minutes or less. 3 minutes. Pare it down real quick. Elevator speech. You need to have it. But you know what you also need to have? What God's done in your life recently are big moments, because there's going to be opportunities in the weeks where somebody's talking about this. You say, hey man, you know what? I was in a similar situation like that. And you know what? I used to have a potty mouth. And you know what? God rescued me from that. Hey, you know what? I used to be stingy. And you know what? God showed me through Jesus his great grace for me. And man, he's turned me into a gracious person by his mercy. You know what? I used to be an excessive gossip. But then I realized God showed me how I wouldn't want somebody to do that about me, and I shouldn't be doing that about other people. And you know what? I used to be hateful and mean, and I used to look for a fight. But you know, Jesus rescued me from that. You know what you're doing in those moments? Those are the moments you're sharing your testimony, your faith story to other people. Yesterday I had the privilege of talking to a bunch of teenagers at the Equip event, which was phenomenal, by the way. Phenomenal. And I had the privilege of talking about how do we know truth. And at the end of that time, I tied it up with this. And you've heard me say this, but it bears repeating today, that in order for someone to come to Christ, it takes roughly 21 touches. And I told them that the reality is the only person in the series from 0 to 21 who knows what number they are is the 21st person. Because the 21st person in this scenario, and it may be not 21 every time, there's probably range, but the only person who knows that they're the one is when you tell, hey man, hey, here's what God's done in my life. Have you accepted Jesus in your life? And they say, no, but I need to right now. You know what number you are, because then they accepted Christ. But you know who else is important? Number two, because without two, you can't get to 21. And number 15, and number 16. And here's my point that I made to them and I want to make to you today, is that when you share what God's doing in your life, it may be in a small way, and they may blow you off and you think, well, they didn't hear me there. Maybe not. You just may be number four. But you got to do your job at four so number five can come along, so in the end, number 21 can come along. Right? And so my point is, you may be having a greater impact in someone's life by simply sharing what God is doing in your life than you can ever imagine this side of heaven. Okay? So here's your challenge today. It's real simple. Share your story. Share your story. Share what God is doing in your life, has done in your life, with other people. At work, on the ball field, walking down the Walmart aisle, in class, teenagers and kids, share what God is doing in your life. I promise you, it will make a difference if you keep on doing it.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.